that God will peace for God's world. And this is the only thing that remains. This was the only thing I remember at times when I came in the agreement that time.
And there are many checks that this is exact and the full answer for up to the fourth, including all possible perturbative corrections. In fact, only one, genus one, and non-perturbative corrections. But as you can see, with this strategy, you can generate also modular functions for other cutting. Similarly, now we can go on and continue with two loops, for example, two loop diagrams. And again, when you do this at two loop diagrams, you find the only difference is that two loops now start with D to the 4 R to the 4. You get here a C5 half modular functions. I didn't give you a general definition, but just let me say that, well, it's simple, I can write it. It's C R is equal sum over omega 2 to the R. And this is sum over m, and m is different than 0. They start with the C5 half, and then there are new modular functions, or novel modular functions, which are not of this form, non holomorphic certain type. Let me just call them E, D to the 6, R to the 4. E tilde D to the 8 R to the 4 plus F D to the 10 R to the 4 plus G D to the 12 R to the 4. And the curious thing about these new modular functions is that they all have the same structure. They obey equations of this form. With some source term which involves a Eisenstein series, the non-holomorphic Eisenstein series. Let me call just P and Q, and this will be P and Q. And lambda is some eigenvalue. This instead obey this equation, R times R minus 1 for this guy that I wrote the upstairs. And this is very suggestive. It suggests that maybe all modular functions of the type 2B effective action are determined by Poisson equations of this form, Poisson equations of this form. This is simply the Laplace operator in the fundamental domain, which is omega 2 squared where omega 1 and omega 2 are the imaginary and real part of omega. Is there any question about this? In other words, if you didn't know about string theory, but for some reason you could guess what are the eigenvalues and the sources, you could determine this exactly the complete perturbative corrections and non-perturbative ones to these couplings. And let me point out that these perturbative corrections involve very high genus. Here, for example, there are contributions up to genus 9. Here up to genus 7, and here up to genus 5. And there is no chance that you can ever compute that by using string perturbation theory. No chance, I can tell you that. Genus 2 is already too complicated to go to this order.
So the differential equations, that's something that you derive, that can easily be derived from something else, from supersymmetry or...
Good question, yeah, this is what I was going to say. As I said, if for some reason you could guess what are the source terms and the eigenvalues, you could immediately compute these guys without any other input. And indeed, the source terms can be inferred from supersymmetry. If you demand supersymmetry of the effective action, of the complete effective action that is, you need to correct the supersymmetry transformations. Here you write S as the reaction as S0 plus S3, meaning the alpha prime to a string order, S4, and so on. And similarly, you write the variation as delta 0, delta 3, and so on. Demanding the delta of S is 0, what you find out is that precisely the sources that participate here, for example, here there is a source zeta 3 half squared, which arise from this term squared. You just compare the same order in alpha prime, so that's all what you do. Here there is a source zeta 1 half, zeta 3 half, that also has a similar interpretation, and here also there are terms zeta 3 half, zeta 5, well, zeta 3 half, zeta 3 half, plus zeta 1 half, zeta 1 half, and here there are also some sources. Well, this is based on unpublished work, but it will appear hopefully very soon.
The Laplacian appears in a standard way, just the Laplacian.
This Laplace operator? Yeah. Well, this is schematic, this derivation. What you can see is that these sort of terms contribute to the same order as this modular function in the supersymmetry variation. But deriving that the precise Laplace of the equation is complicated because at this order supersymmetry variations is a mess. It has been done at lower orders. There have been some works, starting with a work by Green and Setti, and I think I've seen also some work on that. But it's complicated.
Must have missed something. So, what is the so these new modular forms? Do they also have an instanton part as well?
Yes. The only thing that let me say that. For the L equal to modular functions, the only one that contribute into 10 dimensions of the ones I wrote are this and this. There are also other contributions that I'm not writing, but this go away in the 10 dimensional limit. I have multiplied this by RB squared, RB 6, 4, sorry, and RB to the 6. Nevertheless, these guys here, well, I will just skip all what I plan to say about this because I don't have time, but let me just say that they predict, as I say, contributions up to genus 9. And we have checked that the coefficients they predict remarkably agree with string perturbation theory for genus 1, for genus 2, and we have checked for genus 3 as well. Not from directly from string theory because we cannot compute it, but using unitarity, we can determine the genus 3 contribution. And it exactly agrees the prediction at this level. So this is very it's very non-trivial, and it is an evidence that these modular functions may be the exact coupling for even at this order. So let me just now go to the second part of my talk. I only have 10 minutes left. Yeah.
So in principle, you know, since you started from supergravity and you introduced a cutoff, right? And
yeah.
You made a nice argument mm-hmm. how to pick up finite terms. But what stops you from doing the same with gauge fields as well? You know, in principle, on the gravity side, you can compute loops with, you know, forms. And so then you would get an idea what is the full structure of.
Well, first, when I'm talking about loops of supergravity, that includes everything. All contribute includes also the three-form contribution, fermions, everything.
And external legs.
You mean external?
About external legs, yes.
No, you can do that. In principle, you can do that. We just focus on this, on the graviton scattering, but in principle, it can be done as well for the gauge fields.
I suppose there's something to match with on the string theory side here.
Right. So you are saying there is nothing to match. Well, I thought Miguel's work, there is something to match.
Well, how do you get the type form from 2A?
I have a question about the cutoff. So, can I ask you about the cutoff?
Yeah.
So you just choose one way of cutting the, but in principle there are many ways, right, of regularizing the divergent integrals. So is there a preferred way of doing this, or is there a scheme dependence?
No, because when you say lambda is equal 1 over Helfand, no? You may see, you may think, well, what happens if I put 2 Helfand, for example?
No, I meant, like, suppose I do something like dimensional regularization or something. I will never see the power like.
No, but if you do dimensional regularization, you miss many interesting things.
Yeah,
many things that we are determining here at the end, final coefficients that we determine you would miss it if you do dimensional regularization. But dimensional regularization instead is useful to determine mass threshold that we do use.
So that's what I see, that there is a preferred way of cutting.
Yeah.
But is it at all obvious that there are no what's called marginal, irrelevant terms suppressed by the powers of the cutoff?
Okay, I'm going to make an analysis very related to your question.
Okay.
Sorry, one last question related to this. So is the cutoff preserved supersymmetry in your case? Cutoff preserve supersymmetry?
No. Well, before doing that, let me just point out the general structure of what I was saying before. What kind of genus corrections you can get from 11-dimensional supergravity. And the idea is the following. You just use a power counting. You write your amplitude in supergravity as S to some beta of L times order S R to the fourth. That namely, you assume that start the amplitude when expanded in powers of momentum will start with some power beta of L, that at the moment I will not tell you what it is. We just know that in the case of L equal 1, one loop, the amplitude starts with R to the fourth, so beta of 1 is equal to 0. For two loops, start with S squared, so beta of 2 is equal to 2. And it is also known from a recent work by Dixon and collaborators that a three loop starts with 3, with S cubed. So just keep in mind that, and we write a generic term in the L loop sector of 11-dimensional supergravity, and it will have this structure. This is the same I wrote upstairs, but I put all possible dimension full constants, which are powers of the gravitational coupling, the cutoff, and the radius. Now, what I will do now is to convert this into type 2 variables, which is effectively what we do in these calculations. In order to read from supergravity, out of the supergravity result of a given term in the supergravity result, the string, Higer genus, string coefficients, and so on, we need to convert to type 2a variables. And in doing so, I get the following formula. This is written type 2a variables. From this formula, you can read what is the genus contribution for a given term in this expansion. The genus contribution, this should be identified with 2H minus 2, where H is the genus. H is the genus. Using the fact here, all these parameters L, N, M, and beta and R are not independent because by dimensional reasons you can simply connect them. And in fact, you find that 0 is less or equal than N just by using dimensional analysis. Now, the crucial point is that by plugging this relation into here, you learn that you can never produce genus corrections greater than K. So what you learn here, and this is an important conclusion, is that H is less or equal to K for all loops. And which means that each of the couple in type 2A theory obey a non-renormalization conditions. They can be corrected up to K, up to H loops, and then they do not receive any other perturbative corrections. This is more or less the pattern that we were observing this here in the explicit examples we computed, but you can see that this is quite general. And in fact, the H equal K contributions come from L equal 1. Now, and now we go into here, supergravity from string theory, and I need 5 minutes only. But yeah. Now the point is the following. The important thing is that these non-renormalization theorems tell us something on what is the power of momentum that is factorized out of each loop amplitude in superstring theory. And out, using this information, we will get information about ultraviolet behavior. So in general, I can write a string, the string genus H amplitude, genus H amplitude in string theory. Now we start with string theory, not from supergravity. And this has this structure. The power of lambda is just fixed by, well, in string theory there is no lambda, it's alpha prime. So this is the general structure. Now, how do you get supergravity from string theory? You simply let alpha prime go into zero at fixed K-ten, gravitational coupling. In doing so, alpha prime plays the role of a ultraviolet cutoff. Lambda is to be identified with 1 over square root of alpha prime. So this formula tells you that K10 to the 2H minus 1 lambda to the, in terms of lambda, is going to be H minus 6 minus 2 beta is to the beta moreover, we can also connect with the lower dimensional supergravities. In order to connect, to get lower dimensional supergravities from string theory, what you need to do is to compactify the theory on a torus, assume that the dimensions of the torus are of order alpha prime, in such a way that when you take the limit alpha prime to zero, all Kaluza-Klein modes and winding modes decouple, and you are just left, and the only modes which remain with the massless and finite mass are the modes of d-dimensional supergravity. So, written this for the same formula for supergravity, you will just get AH4D is equal to K d 2h minus 1 lambda. Instead of 8, you get now d minus 2, which in the particular case of d equal 10, of course, you recover this formula. So far, I didn't say any non-trivial information, because this is quite general. This is what you expect in general. All the non-trivial information is in this coefficient beta of h. Namely, the genus h string amplitude with what power of the Mandelson variable starts. That's a non-trivial information. As I said, for genus 1, we know that beta is equal to 0. For genus 2, it is known that beta 2 is equal to 2. How about higher genus? This argument here tells you what is beta at higher genus, because it tells you that beta must be exactly equal, beta of h must be exactly equal to h. That's what this argument tells you. Why? Because if beta was lower than h, sorry, there would be a contribution for a given coupling with higher genus than k. No? So this is a more. I must emphasize that this is not. This statement has some assumptions in it, assumptions of duality with M theory, but in any case, we will now use it. And the question is the following: when we expect this to be finite, this amplitude? It will be finite simply if this coefficient is negative, and this means d less than 2 plus 2 beta h plus 6 over h. Now, if we now plug beta is equal to h, we will get that the condition is d less than 2 plus 2h over h is 4, so this becomes just 4 plus 6 over h. And this is the condition we get for finiteness. And using these conditions, you can study where do you expect the first divergence to appear in different supergravities. And I will make a table here summarizing the conclusions. And then you can ask questions. Well, what I will write as entries of these tables is at what loop we expect the first divergence to appear. In dimensions higher than 8, it is known that the first divergence appears at one loop. What? Known, it says. What is known? I will explain why it is. What this is known, this was known without using the arguments that I will explain here. Beta equal h for all h is our arguments. Beta equal to h up to h equal 5 follows from the pure spinor formalisms, and this is a proof. It was shown by Berkowitz. And what is known comes from earlier works of Dixon and also from superspace arguments. And it's basically on the basically use the fact that beta of H in general is much greater than 2. Now you can improve that and say that beta of after the latest work of Dixon, that beta of H is much greater than 3, since they found that the 3 loop amplitude start with S cubed, so with beta equal 3. Using this result in particular, here you would find that the first divergence in for 4-dimensional n equal 8 supergravity start at 6 loops, for 5-dimensional at 4 loops, here 3 and 2. If you use now these results just in this formula, or in this formula, this is a basic formula where you have to plug your preferred value of beta. Here you would find for 7, well, this is already known because there is an explicit calculation in this case that the first divergence appears at 2 loops in 7-dimensional supergravity. In the case of 6 dimensions, there is also an agreement that the first divergence should appear at 3 loops, even in the most optimistic situations that beta is equal to h. And the interesting part comes in 5 dimensions. The Berkowitz theorems guarantee that there should be no loop, no divergence, at least until 6 loops. In this case, the first divergence would appear at 9 loop. To get this result, I emphasize once again, all you have to do is to plug here the Berkowitz value for beta, which will be beta greater or equal than 5, than 6, in fact. And finally, if you now consider 4-dimensional supergravity, with this condition, this is always satisfied because 4 is always less than 4 plus 6 over h. So the theory would be completely finite. Okay, that's all. Thank you.
The question exactly what you mean by supergravity is in lower dimensions. You don't mean a Kaluza-Klein reduction of, say, 10-dimensional supergravity.
No, I mean what I said. You consider the amplitudes, the super string amplitudes compactified on a torus, which have a very well defined expression. Take the radius of the torus, R. All the radius of the torus. Take a rectangular torus, take all the radius equal square root of alpha prime, and then let the limit alpha prime to 0 with kappa d fixed. And in kappa d, I can tell you what is kappa d.
In particular, would you couple any scale? So usually we have this complicated story of consistent Kaluza-Klein reductions that are complicated scalars and coming up with complicated.
Now, what happens here? Well, this is.
So that somehow, that's.
It's another story of the consistency of the truncation, if you, this is a solution or not. This is not the way, this is just, this is much simpler than that, is that the Kaluza-Klein modes running in the loops get an infinite mass. That's what I mean.
So what you call supergravity is the one way you get rid of all Kaluza-Klein modes.
Yeah.
Okay. That I just wanted to make sure. That
yeah, it's just that.
Mm-hmm. What is the connection between the work by Green, Uguri, and Schwartz? And
Well, in their work, they point out that taking this limit, the supergravity limit, has subtleties because there are non-perturbative states which don't decouple. But I think that this will not affect the conclusions for the perturbative part of the supergravity. Now, what is, I must say, the group by Dixon and collaborators already proved finiteness by explicit calculation up to 3 loops. But this part of the story, I find it personally rigorous, and that guarantees that the theory is finite, at least up to 8 loops.
Who did the calculations for 6 and 7? Is it the Dixon proof or?
Seven. This is well known. It's a two loop. It's a this double box diagram that you can do it in any dimensions. It's equivalent to a 5 cube theory, and the three loop calculation was done recently in the dimensions as well, mm-hmm. by the group of Dixon, Roy, Van, Verne, and I think that's it. Let me also emphasize that this condition that we are getting is exactly the same that you would have in super youngness theory. It's not by chance, but because the Feynman diagrams are related.
Is this because of the KLT relations? Or?
Yeah. Well, it's not guaranteed by that, no, because there are also divergences that you need additional cancellations or other than. Generically, you will have structures which contain the same divergence as n equal 4 super youngness, but you have extra divergences which come from connections between this direct product that you do between the to a super youngness theory, but this cancel out. That's the remarkable thing.
Any more questions? Not left time. Okay, again.